Jocks. I need you to lower your expectations a little bit.
What the? KFNC. Mont Bellevue, Houston. ESPN 97.5. A Gow Media Station. Is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, two in the books, one to go. Plenty more of the big shows. We continue to roll on The Usual Suspects on a Thursday baseball day in Houston. As the divisional series is about to get underway between your Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox over at the Minute Maid Park. Chris Sale against Justin Verlander. Can't get better than that. Barry's in San Antonio. Jong is blessing us with his presence and filling in for Nick. I am here as we continue to roll on. We've been kind of on this Cam Newton topic over the last hour. And before we switch gears, Quentin is here. And as a usual suspect, Quentin, you do get priority before we change gears. So what's up on the Cam Newton thing?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Hey, I have to agree with Cam Newton. You know, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, and that's why I like listening to y'all's show, because you guys listen to it no matter where I am on the spectrum. But I think all these women, these so-called analysts that are women, they have no bearing and shouldn't even be allowed on these male-dominated sports. First of all, they don't know what they're talking about, other than maybe one or two of them. I have to give them that. But for the most part, most of these so-called women analysts, all they are, when you see them on TV, they're just show can. You know, for the most part, they have their questions already set out. They ask them to the actual guys who actually played the game or actually coached or whatever, have actually something to say about the game, and they just go about it. They never give an opinion. They're just there to ask questions. And to me, in my opinion, I think they just need to get these women out of the male-dominated sports and put them in female dominated sports and let them analyze those or be commentators on those type of sporting events. And I mean, if she wouldn't have been there in that situation, we wouldn't be talking about this now. But I like that analogy you guys gave earlier. If Bill O'Brien was asked a stupid question by John McCain, he'd tell him, hey, that was a stupid question. But if he was asked by a female, I don't think he would ever call her out like that. Anyways, last but not least, go Strohs. I hang up
to
listen.
Go Strohs.
Senator John McCain.
Quinn, appreciate the call, man.
Senator John McCain's asking questions of Bill O'Brien, Barry.
I knew you were
going to. Jong and I were both looking through the glass at each other, laughing when he said it, but we knew what he meant.
As soon as he looked at John McClain, I was like, oh.
Quentin meant the heavier set of the two. But I get his point, but look, I mean, I was just sitting here jotting him down as he kind of made his point. Jackie McMullen of the Boston Globe, longtime well-respected writer on many sports topics and mainly NBA. Steph Stradley writes here and locally in town along with Jenny Dal Creech of the Chronicle. Susie Culber, Samantha Ponder. You know, you can go up and down the list of Lisa Salters. People that know the sport, females that do their job and do it at a very, very high respectable level. I can't agree with Quentin on that one.
Yeah, look, I like Quentin, and I appreciate the fact that he listens, but if I'm being honest, a lot of what he said was ignorant, and that's just the truth. I mean, this is a job, and there's no requirement that you have ever played football to be able to report on it. Your job is to watch the game, have an opinion, or if you're a reporter, to report the facts, and you go in and you ask questions that give you the information to provide to people. Nothing says you have to know football. You can ask questions. Nothing says you have to have played. Now, when it comes to analysts and, you know, color commentators, sure, you want somebody that's played the game because they know the ins and outs. That's what makes Tony Romo so great. But that doesn't mean you can't break it down because you've studied film. You look at guys like Lance Zierlein. You look at guys like, these are guys that study night in and night out and maybe didn't play or didn't play at a high level, but that doesn't disqualify them if you do your homework. And that was her point. You don't know how much she studied. You don't know what she knows about football. I don't think you should disqualify someone just because they're a woman And it's a male-dominated sport. I can't agree with that any less.
And two things, Barry, because of the fact that, look, she's having to provide her resume because of all this, when in fact there's plenty of armchair quarterback writers that are male in this male-dominated part of the sports world that didn't even play flag football, you know, that have no experience playing the game or playing it at a high level, and yet they're not being questioned for their credentials and their resume. That's one thing.
In every sport. You think John McClain was an all-star athlete? I mean, look, there are plenty of guys that are good writers that know the game, that know good questions to ask, but weren't good football players or never played, and that shouldn't disqualify them either. I will say this, though. He was right about something, and it brings up a pretty good point, and one that I've always kind of felt but never really vocalized. But we can talk about the elephant in the room being when they get these sideline reporters. We can all admit that they're trying to get someone that's easy on the eyes. I mean, that's what they're doing. It's almost like this arms race to get the hottest sideline reporter. Just like in Houston, there's this arms race to get hot weather people or traffic people or whatever. And when you do that, you're kind of perpetuating the issue that a lot of people are trying to fight against, and you've got these women out there that are getting jobs based on what they can do, and they've started paid their dues and they've done small networks, but it certainly isn't helping that they're easy on the eyes and look good, and so it almost creates or fans the flames of that environment and perpetuates it and makes it even worse.
And I'll give you, by the way, to back up your last point previous to that one, Jess Mendoza as another name of someone that didn't play Major League Baseball but knows her stuff and is easy to listen to regardless. She brings it. She brings great information. She's got personality, and I think we're both big fans of what she does on ESPN.
Mandy texted and said she wanted to slap Quentin.
I can see that.
I think Quentin, but again, I'll take all views. It doesn't mean we're going to agree. I still love the hell out of Quentin for listening to the show and being loyal to us and having been down from day one.
Yep.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah,
but yeah,
no doubt.
We just disagree.
Got Johnny and BC still holding, so we're going to get at least one in here before we go to the break. Johnny, what's up?
Yeah, I'm actually a plumber, and there's not a lot of women in the plumbing trade, but if I have a woman plumber on my job site, it's not normal. She says, hey, look at that siphon trap. That's going to sound weird to me coming from a woman. Now, when like my grandma said, if that reporter can't handle the heat, she needs to get out the kitchen. Maybe Cam was genuine. Maybe he doesn't hear that a lot by women. And he didn't say women were bad. He just said it was weird coming from a woman. I'll hang up now.
All right. I appreciate it, man. I think that's fine. You can think that's weird coming from a reporter, but you don't have to mention gender. A couple of texts that we got. I don't know. We got to get to break. Somebody said, where the hell did it go now? Cam was only stating the fact that it's different to see a woman talking about route running. It's not meant to be disrespectful. Well, if you watch the video, he was kind of disrespectful because he laughed at her. I mean, it essentially laughed in her face about being a woman and asking questions about route running. It's what he did. He smirked, he snickered, he laughed, and then he got serious after a little bit into the question. But you can't sit here and tell me that he wasn't trying to be a smartass about it.
No, there was a lot of smugness to the way he responded. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Oh,
one
Barry.
More Cam Newton situation. What?
Oh, the game just started in Houston. Dude, I just want to let you know the game started. Okay.
Oh, my God. I thought you were going to tell me that somebody you were going to give me a score or something.
You don't think that was planned out or anything, do you? No. Okay.
You gave me a heart attack, Joel.
That was probably one of my main goals in that, doing that, yes.
I hate you. Oh, so this is another text. It's amazing Trump says grab women by the thing and not one eyebrow was raised. Bro, what country were you living in? This whole country lost their minds when he said it. Of course eyebrows were raised.
Yeah, including Billy Blanks. Billy Bush. Blanks, Bush. You know, yeah. It all rolls in.
Whatever.
All right. Okay, so we'll continue to roll on. BC, we see you. We're going to get to you, but there's a lot more to get to. Barry wants to get a little breakdown on the UFC this weekend. We've got that coming up. We've got a full slate of NFL and college on the horizon, and lots more to get to. Don't go anywhere. Much more of the usual suspects right here on ESPN 97.5.
To the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Anxious about the recent election and the impact on your business? Let HRNP help you navigate through the uncertainty. is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, where there's already breaking news on this Astros Game 1 situation in the ALDS. Eduardo Nunez, who has been a huge spark for the Red Sox down the stretch, already wearing a very large knee brace and in the designated hitter spot in the two-hole today. Without contact, swings, trying to run out a ground ball, falls to the ground, needs two people to carry him off the field, and is... for all intents and purposes, out. That could be a big blow to a Red Sox team that has really gotten, like I said, a spark offensively from this guy. But with the size of the brace that he had on that right leg, you got to believe that something was up and they were just hoping to catch lightning in a bottle by keeping him, at least from an offensive perspective, in the lineup. But Barry, I throw to you, I always thought when I, in playing the game, that in when you remove the designated hitter, you lose him. So in late situations, yeah, when you're putting in a pinch runner for a Beltran, say, and it goes extra innings, well, we've seen the Astros pitchers in rare occasions having to hit.
Yeah, it is. It usually the player listed as the DH in the lineup, you has to at bat at least once before you can sub for him. And if you sub for him for defensive purposes or what have you, you put him in the game. Because sometimes you'll have to put your DH, like in the case of Gattis, he had to catch for whatever reason. You lose that spot. In the case of an injury, though, there's a couple of exceptions. If the DH is injured or ejected, you can sub in another player. If the opposing team changes starting pitchers before the DH gets their first at bat, you can also legally sub in another player at the DH position.
Okay, so there you have it. Good breakdown.
Now that's according to umpire Bible. We'll see. I mean, you're going to find out pretty soon. But either way, they just lost their number two hitter in that lineup.
If this is wrong or whatever,
and they do have to put in a pitcher, oof.
No doubt. He was hitting 313.
Now you got Chris Sale that's going to have to bat?
313, 12 bombs. He was hitting 313, 12 bombs, 58 ribbies in a very abbreviated season for the Red Sox. But like I said, he was a huge spark for that offense. And as you said, hitting in the two-hole and hitting over 300 for a team that doesn't have a lot of pop and doesn't do a lot offensively other than hit singles, this guy was a spark for them. That could be a huge loss.
Yeah, and, you know, if the rule is right, then okay, they get to put somebody in there. But if the rule is wrong and they have to put in Chris Sale, you know, the top three spots in the lineup are always going to get the most at-bats on any team in any game. They'll get four, and a lot of times other guys will get three. So that means Chris Sale is going to have to get probably at least three more at-bats. That's fighting with one hand tied behind your back when you're facing Justin Verlander and the other team gets nine batters, and now you've got to go out and play National League rules. Man, that really sucks.
Let's take it another step farther from a psychological and mental standpoint. Here's a guy who's never pitched in the playoffs before that you know has got a lot going through his mind, and also is a guy that is very meticulous in the way he goes about his business and his routine. Now he's going to have to put a batter's helmet on and put some gloves on and get in the box against one of the best pitchers in baseball when he really has always just been focused on throwing the baseball. That could alter him in a lot of ways because, you know, God forbid, or maybe, you know, if you're a Red Sox fan, maybe for some other reason, he makes some kind of contact and he's got to run it out. And then he's got to get back on the mound real quick, things he hasn't been used to doing. Or, you know, Verlander starts messing around with him, goes inside a little bit, messes with his head a little bit more. And he probably has a routine in between innings of what he likes to do to stay ready, keep the arm warm. That's going to be interesting to watch, too, because not only has he never pitched in a playoff game before, I'm sure he probably hasn't hit very much in his career.
Yeah, it's probably hard to find some stats for Chris Sale and his at-bats. I'm sure Baseball Reference has them, but my God, they can't be pretty.
Let's go, and on that topic, Wesley wants to get here on the Astros real quick. Wesley, what's up?
I have a question. Why are y'all on and not the game?
Because we are not the flagship home of the Houston Astros.
You can listen to the game on 94.1. Okay, hung up. We have ESPN's call on 94.1.
Okay, there you go. That's what I talk about, competition.
Sweet-ass call, guy.
Yeah.
Good job, buddy.
Thanks for listening to us.
Weird.
Sports Map, 94.1. From a physical fit standpoint, it's sports fat. But Sports Map 94.1 with your game on the ESPN side of things, if that so floats your boat. At 4 o'clock, it's available on ESPN 94.1 FM, Jong. 4 p.m. is when you can pick up the broadcast on Sports Map. Isn't that correct?
No, it's on actually now.
No, Jong. 4 p.m. after the usual suspects are over, then people are encouraged to catch the baseball game on 94.1. See where I'm going with that?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
By the way, TSU Martin... On the Cam thing, TSU Martin said, Cam situation is why the NFL's ratings are going down. Nobody cares about what the athletes say. People just want to watch the game. Whether you believe that or, I mean, whether you agree with that statement or not, I do think people are getting, you know, you've got the whole kneeling with the anthem, and it doesn't matter what side you're on. Some people are sick of it. Some people don't want to talk about it anymore. They just want their sports. They want to leave the politics out of it, and this might be another example of that with Cam, so... Might be onto something, man. The NFL continues to shoot themselves in the foot. It's one of those things, are they too big to fail? You know, with all the stuff that goes on, all the issues that they have, it seems like, you know, every year there's tons of issues that come out with athletes and whether it's CTE or domestic violence or taking a knee or whatever. They almost seem too big to fail.
No doubt about it. Last call we'll take on the subject because we only got a half hour left to go in the big show. So Brandon still wants to get in here on Cam. Brandon, we'll get you in real quick. What's up? Brandon, what's going on?
Just wanted to add comment to the Cam Newton comment that he made towards the female reporter.
Yep.
I mean, one thing that I had noticed is Cam Newton calling Colin Kaepernick a legend. Also going into the touchdown, the end zone after he scores, raising a clenched fist. But then he goes and singles out an entire demographic, that being a female, that they can't add comment to something that he does. So I think it voiced everything that he said about Colin Kaepernick and also what he was doing in the end zone by raising this clenched fist. I mean, to me, it really makes him look like a joke. I mean, just imagine a NASCAR driver saying, I think it's awkward, or I think it's funny to me that a black guy is adding comment onto NASCAR. I don't know. It's just funny to me. You know what I mean?
Yep. No, it's
and laughing while he said it. Brandon. Laughing while he said it.
Yeah, good point too, Barry. But Brandon, great insight there. We gave you other analogies, including the one that I thought was so accurate that Damian Woody brought but to the table because it hit home in referencing black quarterbacks. But yeah, I mean, we can go back and forth and all around on this thing, but I mean, I think we can all agree it just wasn't a very smart decision on Cam's part to do the chuckle, to do the response, and then to not apologize as quickly as possible to kind of try and wrap it up, Barry, right?
Yeah, man, not good, not smart.
No, so we'll table the Cam Newton talk because it's consumed a great deal for us. By the way, the Astros lineup, Barry, against Chris Sale in their careers. George Springer now 3-for-13. Bregman has never faced him. Altuve 8-for-21. Carlos Correa 2-for-10. Evan Gattis 2-for-9. Josh Reddick 3-for-14. Gurriel never faced. Marwin 1-for-9. McCann never faced. But oh, by the way, Barry, that's all about to change. I know you don't want to hear this, but everybody else does. As the man that had never faced Chris Sale before has now faced him once and has gone yard. Alex Bregman has gone deep in the first inning, and your Stros have a 1-0 lead.
Wait a minute. The irony in this, to me, is hilarious. Because for the last year, including last year's baseball trade deadlines, everyone, there was the big discussion, would you trade Alex Bregman for Chris Sale? Would you do it? And I know, you know, like AJ was like, hell yeah.
Oh,
and I
was AJ
like,
was hell the, yeah. The commander.
I was too. I would do that deal. How hilarious is it that he goes out first at bat against this guy and goes yard? Oh, mwah, that is so damn sweet.
So sweet, in fact, that he's probably going to get on Twitter tonight and respond to people on his Twitter account. We'll see what happens next, but I'll be the Astros with the early 1-0 lead against the Red Sox. And, oh, Barry, why don't you make it 2? Because the hope-to-be, soon-to-be American League MVP has gone yard as well. The Astros 2, the Red Sox nothing as the Chris Sale convention continues as he's crumbling right now in Minute Maid Park. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the usual suspects right here on ESPN 97.5.
This is the
The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Here's the delivery from Sale. It's hit very well by Bregman. Back to left field. Back. Altuve, all 5'6" of them, led the league in batting for the, led the majors in batting. And 346, third time in 4 years he's won the AL batting crown. He lays in this one. Back it goes to left center field. Back, way up there. It is two. It is gone.
In the broom closet somewhere in San Antonio, I can only imagine the facial expressions that I am missing in this extravaganza because of the fact that that was Chris Berman and ESPN Radio. I don't know. Everybody was complaining about how offensive it was and how disrespectful it was to the Astros to be on MLB Network and have a day game for this opening round series, but it's almost more offensive to have Chris Berman calling the game on radio and giving all of us at least one more listen to back.
Oh, my God. He has forever ruined that moment. Wow. And it's just ruined now. I would much rather, I hope that Todd Callis. Thanks, Skrillex.
Dude, it sounds like the Cadbury egg commercials during Easter when that bunny is just back. I mean, he just keeps going, and then he can't even see it to know where the ball is at first. Oh boy.
Okay, look. By the way, that one site had me questioning the DH replacement rules,
right?
Because
right.
It was umpirebible.com, and yes. it said if the DH is injured, you can sub in another player, but Chris Sale would technically be another player. So I went to the MLB website and found the rules and regulations for the DH. So I'll just read you real quick what it says. Pinch hitters for a designated hitter may be used. Any substitute hitter for a designated hitter himself becomes the designated hitter. A replaced designated hitter shall not reenter the game in any capacity. The DH may be used defensively. That's when you lose it, though. But they keep the same position in the batting order, but the pitcher must then bat in place of the substituted defensive player. So that's when you lose the DH to a pitcher. But in this case, yes, it sounds like, according to Major League Baseball's website, you can pinch hit for the DH with another hitter.
But that
which is essentially
sound,
what you'd be doing.
It does sound confusing in the fact that you have to. I mean, how do you clarify that you're replacing?
Well, you would be pinch hitting
replacement.
For No, you would be pinch hitting for him. If you take, okay, so let's use this example, right? Nunez is hurt, so they're going to bring in somebody off the bench. They'll announce him as a pinch hitter when that spot in the order comes up, and that's the spot he would occupy for the rest of the game. If, for example, take Gattis. If, for example, Gattis was the DH, McCann gets hit in the back of the head, and they don't have a third catcher, then Gattis goes to play the defensive position of catcher, keeps his spot in the order, but then a pitcher would then bat where McCann was in the lineup.
I got you.
Make sense?
It's a little bit confusing, but yes, I got it. That's good news to know there. And it's second back-to-back postseason home runs in Astros team history. Not since Game 4 of 2015 of the ALDS when Carlos Correa and a Colby Jack gave you back-to-backs at that
point. Nice. I was looking up. I was looking up stats for Chris Sale. When's the last time he gave up back-to-back home runs? Because that can't be often.
Yeah.
Since 2015, he's done it once. And it was this year, and it was Todd Frazier. Todd Frazier and Matt Holliday of the Yankees went back-to-back on him September 3rd of 2017.
Because you highlighted how bad his September was. That's when I was betting. It had to happen recently.
Yep. They took him back-to-back in the fourth inning with one out. Now, in the fifth inning of the last game that he pitched in against Toronto, Teoscar Hernandez and Kendrys Morales hit a couple of home runs in the fifth inning, but one was with no outs and one was with two outs. So he's, you know, he's susceptible to the long ball a little bit here and there, but back-to-back, it's only happened once since 2015.
Yeah, and that Blue Jay stat, one other key into that is, does the one name that had those two home runs hit you a little bit interesting? Teoscar Hernandez, the Astros prospect, traded along with the Aoki Pokey for Liriano.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still all right with that, though. They got plenty of bats. I'm not worried about losing Teoscar Hernandez, I'll tell you that much. The question is going to be who the Red Sox put in to replace Nunez in that two-hole. So that'll be...
That I think about immediately is Young, because he's from Houston, and he always kills the Astros.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, he's always been an Astros killer. Yeah, I would think that he's going to be one of the candidates. We'll see what they do as they're in the second inning with a 2-0 lead. Verlander back on the hill for the Astros. Just looking at things social media-wise before we get to a lot of other things, but there's a UFC fight coming up, Barry, and since you're out tomorrow, you wanted to make sure that the UFC fans out there get a little of that extra knowledge and coverage on the UFC.
Yeah, man, UFC 216, coming up this Saturday. Pretty decent card, Ferguson versus Lee. Not one that it's Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee for the interim lightweight title. You got Demetrius Johnson versus Ray Borg. I think that's going to actually be a pretty good fight, but Johnson is such a heavy favorite at minus 1,400, and Borg is plus 800. That Ferguson-Lee fight, Ferguson's minus 210, Lee is plus 175 for that interim lightweight title. Derek Lewis returning to the cage at plus 215 to face Fabricio Werdum at minus 265 in a heavyweight tilt. If you recall, Derek Lewis's last fight out, he retired in the cage. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was exhausted. He had been fighting a lot. He trained a lot. And he also gave less than a stellar performance in the cage. And I'll stop a little bit short of saying he quit, but he didn't give a maximum effort in that fight. And I think a lot of what he had to say after the fight and retiring had to do with just being embarrassed. But Derek is the number 6 heavyweight in the UFC. Verdum is number 2. Verdum is susceptible to the knockout. And I like, as far as odds go, I really like that plus 215 for Derek Lewis. But if I was picking, I'm going to take big Derek Lewis in this fight. I've seen him fight black belts. The problem is with Verdum, he is world class. He's one of the best black belts on this planet. And that's the thing that worries me about Derek when he fights these ground guys, these BJJ guys, is he doesn't have great wrestling. He can't prevent, you know, he's not great at preventing takedowns. He's good, not great, but he's not a jiu-jitsu guy at all, but he's strong. And sometimes, even when you got guys that are technical, if you're stronger than them, you can overcome the technical side of the sport. So we'll see. I like Derek Lewis with the knockout. I think he catches people more often than not. And like I said, Verdum has been knocked out a couple times in his career. So I'll take Derek Lewis in that. For the rest of them, though, I'll take Ferguson, Johnson, and Dariush. So there's my picks. Or Dariush, excuse me.
I'm going to break it down like a mother. Yeah, I wish Nick was here to get in on this, too, because you guys break it down like a mother, and I get a chance to sip on some water and watch some baseball.
Shout out to Nick, too, man. I just want to say Nick's got some, you know, personal things going on, and I want him to know that our heads and hearts are with him, man. We're thinking about him.
You're absolutely right. I didn't want to get too much on the air about that, but he did, you know, post some of it on Twitter. But, yeah, we love you, Nick, and stay safe out there. You know that we, as Barry said, are pulling for you. We got one segment left to go before we turn it over to the guy that's already behind the window because he just needed more work to do. Jong is already waiting for Fred and AJ, who can't wait to get back in the studio after an exciting day out at the Hotel Zaza. The Blitz is next, but we got one segment left to go, so don't go anywhere. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Stay with Chris.
I made that sit
stay
down.
My come fighter, that's it.
So let's continue.
Stay with my fighter.
You fight me, you.
Come on, let's continue. There's some good answers, some good questions. Can we keep this on a level? We discuss behind closed doors.
I'd like to just get back.
Don't laugh at me, please. Don't laugh at me. When you laugh again, don't laugh at me. When you laugh, you son of a bitch, I f*** your... I f*** your wife in your bed. I'm gonna put you in there. I'm gonna scare you. Don't fight with me.
Let's go. So in case you missed it, that was a press conference for a 168-pound bout that was scheduled in boxing this weekend between Chris Eubank Jr. and Avni Yildirim.
That was close.
Close enough, right? You want to try a shot at it?
Yeah, I can't. I don't know. Hell no. Yildirim? I have no idea who those dudes are.
I asked John during the break. I'm like,
whatever.
Yildirim. Anyway. It wasn't the fighters that went AWOL. Yildirim's manager went nuts. His name is Ahmet Oner, and he got into it with a member of Eubank's camp and then started yelling at him, then threatened to fight him, sat down, then immediately sprung back up, and then had that outburst. And then after he called him an idiot, said, look, bottom line is he has no problem with the guy that his client is fighting. He had a problem with the faces and the remarks that a guy in his camp was making towards him.
Here's my thing. I'm okay with him getting upset. I'm okay with him saying, you son of a bitch, I'll bleep your wife in your bed. I'm okay with all that. What I'm not okay with is why he had to do it in an Arnold Schwarzenegger voice. I don't understand that. Play that last part again, John, if you have it. Tell me he doesn't sound like the governor. It's so weird.
You son of a bitch, I f***ed your wife in your bed.
Well, I mean, if
Doesn't he kind of sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger a little bit?
I mean, if you'd have said substituted nanny or housekeeper for the wife, it could have been the Terminator. You don't know.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, I love that's some of the best stuff happens at press conferences and weigh-ins, and that's why I always liked covering MMA for the Cage Tour. Is even local stuff, man. People get dumb, and it's fun to watch, man. People just lose it for no reason. So
Oner actually went to Twitter later and said, "S happens. I just can't stand when people disrespect me, my country, and my people. This had nothing to do with Chris Eubank Jr. He's a good guy. He'll show a good fight. It was this other idiot who provoked me with racist comments." Yeah.
By the way, I have a feeling that you'll see Hanley Ramirez slide into that number two spot in the lineup for the Red Sox. That would be my guess.
That's a good guess. I didn't know he wasn't in the lineup because he's obviously a big piece for the Red Sox. But if he wasn't in there already, yeah, it's a good call. By the way, a little bit more controversy in that game, too. Verlander had put the first two on in the second inning, struck a guy out, then gave up a hit to right. Reddick, instead of going for the play at the plate, threw to third and got Pedroia. And they had to go to replay because they were interested in seeing if the third out occurred at third base before the run scored, thus not allowing the run to score. And after further review, the run was allowed to score in the bang-bang play. So Astros 2, Red Sox 1, Stros coming to bat bottom of the second.
That was a lot closer than I thought it'd be.
Yeah.
It was literally bang-bang like you were saying.
Yep. Yeah, it was really tight. And I kept saying to Jung, look, you know, albeit MLB Network gets this game, they've already taken enough scrutiny, but show the replay at least once before we get the umpire's decision, because we're sitting there all waiting on the edge of our seats, and they just keep showing, like, a wide angle of the field. And I'm like, show the play, because from our perspective...
They never showed it?
They finally did, right before the umpires made their decision. But we're like, good Lord, show the play. You've got how many cameras and how many replay machines?
Right.
Maybe you can tap in a wire.
Run up on the board on the...
Maybe you can get a wire link tap to the umpire's room and get that feed if you need it. But show the damn play. It was driving me crazy.
And they still don't have it up on the website, so I don't know what's going on there. But it still says 2-0 Astros on the website. And so they've already gone to break, right? Like, I mean, they're at commercial.
They're just coming back from break right now. And Stros are
coming. There it is, finally. They just put it up. Wow, that's crazy. Well, there you go. Did you see, did you have something you wanted to hit up on, Joel?
No, go ahead.
I was looking at this. You know, you and I have talked about this in the past about hot seats.
Yep.
And they came out with this thing, the NFL hot seats. This was a couple of days ago. And they were talking about who's number one and all that. And I was curious to see if our boy, Bill O'Brien, would make the list. And he did not crack the top six, surprisingly, for some. But I think it helps when you play the Patriots well. You're 2-2, which isn't great. But, hey, 2-2 keeps you on track for 9-7. And apparently that's just fine and acceptable here. The names on the list right now, according to ESPN, or excuse me, USA Today and Nate Davis, number one, no surprise, Hugh Jackson. I don't think there's any surprise there that he's on the hot seat for what he's doing in Cleveland. Ben McAdoo, number two. Number three surprised me quite a bit, and not just because they haven't played well, but I just felt like he was never going to be gone, and that's Marvin Lewis of the Cincinnati Bengals. Does it surprise you that he would be in the top three?
You know what? I thought Marvin Lewis, to be honest with you, after the debacle with Burfict and Pac Man Jones should have been gone. I know he's been on the hot seat before. I didn't even expect him to be there for this season. But here's a guy that, you know, he has naked pictures of somebody because he continues to survive.
Yeah, and he was number one on the list last week, so he fell to number three. He got leapfrogged by McAdoo and Jackson. Number four on the list, John Fox of the Bears. Number five, Chuck Pagano of the Colts. And number six, Todd Bowles of the Jets. Those are that's your top six coaches on the hot seat. I think that's a pretty good list. I mean, that's I couldn't really think of anyone. A lot of new guys on bad teams that, you know, you need to give them a couple of years, but I think that's a pretty decent list.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think because you kind of wonder what their criteria is, because the one thing with the Bill O'Brien situation is you can factor in wins, losses, and all these other things. A lot of the things that we've been talking about is, look, if there's just a relationship that's toxic in between the front office and the coaching staff or the head coach and the GM or the ownership or whatever it is, that's going to factor in. And I don't know if they factor those kind of things in. And then you also got to factor in tenure. Like, John Fox has started to show signs of being able to bring his players in and turn it around in Chicago. But a guy like Ben McAdoo, he's been there long enough. And when you've got OBJ and you've got Eli Manning and you've got the amount of money they spent on the defensive line, in my mind, he's the number one candidate to go right now.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, it's actually kind of a shrewd move for John Fox to bring in Mitchell Trubisky, because now he buys himself some time to be like, hey, you guys went and got this kid, and I'm going to play him, and if he's not good right away, you know, let's give him some time. Let's give me some time.
And he can go,
kind of a shrewd move by Fox.
You've seen what I've been able to do when you've given me time with Carolina. You've seen what I've been able to do when you've given me time to at least set the table for the Broncos. Well, give me some time now with this kid, and let me keep bringing in my players, and we're going to continue to get better because they've at least shown signs of it. But, you know, even a guy like Hugh Jackson, everybody across the league, just what an offensive genius. So he buys time there, but he also hasn't been there that long either. And I think you got to let him get his type players in there as well. It's kind of like, you know, college recruiting. And when you get like Tom Herman's situation at UT, he's going to say, you know, give me 2 to 3 years to get my recruits in here. That's the kind of things that happen in the NFL too. But you mentioned a big one. I don't know how Cincinnati isn't looking for a coach, especially with the way they're playing now. And based on how long that seat has been extremely hot there. And I think that Marvin Lewis is right behind Ben McAdoo in my mind.
Well, I know Lewis has had some health issues, and I don't know if he still does, but maybe that's factored into them giving him a little bit of a reprieve. I don't know. But, yeah, it's amazing to see he survived this long. Isn't he like the longest tenured guy
right
in
now,
the NFL?
I think he's close. Next to Belichick. Yeah. Next to Belichick, because Belichick's been there forever.
Okay.
But I think, you know, the biggest thing there, too, is, look, they haven't exactly made great decisions. I know Vontae Burfict can play, but after the things that he's done and how many times he's been suspended and how he basically cost you a playoff game, you give him a year-to-year. You don't give him an extension. Pac-Man Jones has been kept around. They don't make solid to sound decisions all the time in Cincinnati. So their track record kind of speaks for themselves.
Yeah.
Hey, you're gonna go watch the game somewhere now, aren't you?
I am. I was looking at so Belichick was hired in 2000. Lewis was hired in 2003. Mike McCarthy, 2006. Along with Sean Payton. They were both hired in 2006. So
I have
there you
to
go.
Catch up with Mike McCarthy on Sunday. So,
Do you now?
Yeah, and I'm gonna be paying very careful attention to the landscaping and the beauty in the Metroplex area so that I can report back on Monday.
As well
Monday.
You should.
Yes, yes.
As
in the
well
meantime,
you should.
I look forward to a full report from the Alamo City when you return on Monday, and if you're elevating them to number 2 or 1 in the city rankings in Texas, or if Houston continues to plummet on the downside.
Travel safe, man.
Hey, you two have some great shows, and we'll catch up with you again on Monday. So Barry from San Antonio today, out tomorrow because we are at Luke's Ice House in Beaumont, so we'll have the Astros game on there. Stop in, check us out. We'll have some fun, lots of drink specials, including Miller Lite and Coors Light. We had a great time last week, so much so we'll be back again tomorrow. And then Monday, hopefully the crew will be back in tow. But, John, we really appreciate you doing the extra session with us, and he'll be sitting
Thank
in that
you,
seat for AJ and Fred coming up next. So for all of you, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Barry, have a great shows and have a good time in San Antonio. And we'll talk to you again 1 o'clock tomorrow as we get ready for Astros Red Sox Game 2 and a full weekend of football. Don't go anywhere. The Blitz is next. We are the Usual Suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.